You're tuning in to Going Public on KRCU, and I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Republicans say the health insurance markets set up by former President Obama's signature health law are collapsing. The GOP plan that passed the House allows states to let insurance companies charge higher premiums to uninsured people with pre-existing conditions. States like Missouri could set up a separate high-risk pool to cover those people instead. As St. Louis Public Radio's Jerry Buscarin reports, it's an old idea made new again.
Back when insurance companies could still deny coverage to people with pre-existing conditions, 35 states had a public plan for people who couldn't buy coverage anywhere else. The pools took people with higher health costs out of the general insurance market, put them in another pool, and subsidized the cost with payments from insurance companies. They were later phased out by the Affordable Care Act. In 2008, Barb Fleming of North St. Louis County had built a small business selling tableware. Then her doctor found a lump. It was stage 2 breast cancer.
But I also knew I was going to have insurance issues because I only had catastrophic insurance. So it was renewable every 6 months.
That meant she would lose her coverage and now had a pre-existing condition. Desperate for health insurance, she applied for a low-wage job at a big-box store, but was too sick to work after surgery. One friend even proposed marriage so she could get on his plan.
I felt like I could control the cancer. I had no control over this because it was absolutely, I felt like, at the whim of whatever that insurance company decided.
Finally, Fleming found Missouri's high-risk pool. But the plan started at $820 a month and wouldn't cover costs related to her cancer for a year unless she wrote an appeal to the state's insurance regulator. Premiums increased up to $1,200 a month. That's why the idea of high-risk pools coming back is so scary for her.
I remember when I was first diagnosed, when I called my brother and I told him I would probably have to file bankruptcy, and would he help me? To me, you're heading back into those kind of territories for people.
Vernita McMurtry directed Missouri's high-risk pool, starting in 2004. It had good coverage if you could afford it, but she says the program was chronically underfunded. Even though insurance companies paid into the program, Missouri reimbursed the companies with tax credits, and McMurtry says it wasn't enough to keep premiums down.
What it would have taken back then to make them more effective and to increase enrollment would have been adequate funding, and that didn't happen then, and it's not crafted to occur going forward.
In 2010, the Affordable Care Act allocated $5 billion for high-risk pools before they were phased out in 2014. But the money ran out, and they stopped enrolling new people. The latest plan passed by House Republicans allows states to reestablish high-risk pools and let insurance companies charge more based on a person's health status, but only if they're uninsured for more than 2 months, and only for a year afterwards. The House earmarked $8 billion for this, plus state stability funds. But Karen Politz of the Kaiser Family Foundation says states would have to match the money.
The real question is there enough money? And it would be more, I think, than states had in the past to work with. But states would have to pony up a lot of money.
Republicans argue that the risk pools could help improve choices in the insurance market and bring down premium costs for everyone else. Others say the idea is fundamentally unfair and prices sick people out of the market. Politz says you have to look at it in the context of all the other cuts proposed by the Republican plan.
While states are kind of dealing with who's going to be in this market and how could we siphon off, you know, the expensive people and pay for them another way, the Medicaid program is getting cut by close to $900 billion.
As written, the Republican plan would leave 23 million more people uninsured by 2026, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Even if the Senate's version varies greatly, risk pools may still be on the table. The Trump administration recently advised states to use a Medicaid waiver program to establish risk pools, among other things, if options for individual insurance are limited. I'm Jerry Buscarin, St. Louis Public Radio.
Hospitals and patients alike say the shortage of mental health professionals in Missouri has reached crisis levels. The series, Waiting for Care, looks at how this shortage has wide-reaching ramifications on families, jobs, the criminal justice system, and hospitals. KSMU's Jennifer Moore reports on the reasons behind the shortage.
Until a few years ago, Addie Blankenship saw herself as a relatively healthy mom of three. She didn't recognize that she was exhibiting symptoms of obsessive-compulsive disorder, a mental condition that leads to obsessive thoughts and compulsive actions.
I would spend hours and hours washing things. Or I would have a thought that something may be on my clothes, so I would change my clothes every time I'd have a bad thought.
That was by day. By night, as her husband and kids slept, she spent hours checking and rechecking to make sure windows were locked, candles were extinguished, and the stove was turned off.
When I was at my lowest, I would just sit in the bathroom, sometimes hitting my head on the bathroom wall because I just wanted the thoughts to stop.
Blankenship's mother, a nurse, took her to an emergency department in a Springfield hospital. A doctor there told her he thought she had OCD, but that she'd need a psychiatric evaluation. The first opening was in 2 weeks. After the psych evaluation, she had to wait 2 more weeks for the results, she said. At that point, she says she was begging God to take her life.
The therapist was relatively easy to get into, but the psychiatrist had like a 2-month wait. And he was the only one who could get my meds straightened out.
Blankenship's story is not uncommon. Wait times for mental health care in Missouri are often even longer in rural counties where the shortage is most acute. Dr. Mike Nitzel is the deputy director of the Missouri Department of Mental Health.
If you look at psychiatrists in 70 of the 114 counties, there is no licensed psychiatrist. And then you look at licensed psychologists, about half of the counties in Missouri do not have a licensed psychologist.
One reason for the shortage of psychiatrists and psychologists, Nitzel said, is that it's hard to convince an urban-trained professional to relocate to a more rural area. There are cultural reasons and reasons of convenience. And sometimes, Nitzel said, the professionals have already had children by the time they finish residency and don't want to move their families. A high turnover rate in Missouri's mental health workforce isn't helping matters. And of course, there's the issue of salaries, Nitzel said.
The salary that you can pay in some private agencies, which tend to be clustered in your urban areas or around academic health centers, that salary is significantly higher than can typically be afforded in smaller clinics or in smaller communities in the rural areas.
And then there are those Missouri institutions, like medical schools, that train and award degrees to these highly trained individuals. Each institution usually has a cap on how many psychiatrists or psychologists it accepts each year. Dr. Paul Tomlinson is the acting CEO of Burrell Behavioral Health in Springfield.
The shortage has, just from the most objective data we have, certainly the shortage has gotten worse from the standpoint of the number of psychiatrists that are coming out of medical school and residencies.
Another contributing factor, Tomlinson said, could be that more people are seeking treatment.
There's a generational effect that's happening. People are growing up with perhaps less stigma about seeking care.
Since embracing her treatment, Addie Blankenship is feeling well. She's the director of the Hope Center at NAMI Southwest Missouri, where she helps others navigate their own mental health journeys. She says the most frequent question she's asked by clients is, how am I supposed to wait?
Because of these waits, people use substances they shouldn't. And because of these waits, people do commit suicide. And because of these waits, people are suffering.
Most of Missouri's 114 counties are already limping along without adequate numbers of mental health workers. And yet, according to data from the Missouri Economic Research and Information Center, unless something changes, the state will experience a shortage of nearly 500 mental health counselors, more than 500 psychologists, and 230 psychiatrists through the year 2022. I'm Jennifer Moore.
Our next story comes from the historic Fort D. KRCU's Lindsay Grojean captured the sounds of a day there with this audio postcard.
My name is Scott House. I'm one of the coordinators for Fort D and a member of the Turner Brigade Association. Fort D was one of the four earthen forts around the city of Cape Girardeau that were built in the summer of 1861. And the purpose was to protect the city from attack from the land. Cape Girardeau had a lot of unionist people in it, and people from all over southeast Missouri who were unionist fled to Cape Girardeau for protection. And these earthworks that we see here right around us are the original earthworks, and this is the only of the many urban forts that protected a city from attack. This is the last one remaining. The rest are all gone. The hinterlands from Cape Girardeau had a lot of secessionists in them. A lot of slave owners were out in Scott and Stoddard County and other places. There were also a lot of, and we call them secessionists, you can't really call them Confederates. They used the outbreak of hostilities to basically carry out thievery and murder. And their particular targets were people of German origin. A lot had moved to Missouri in the 1840s, and they settled out away from Cape Girardeau, but also in the city. They were attacked early in the Civil War because they were unionist and also they were different. So many of them fled to Cape Girardeau, and the men generally joined with the Union Army. So we had local men who formed an entire company of the 29th Missouri Infantry, and we had men that joined the Engineers and formed Company G of the Missouri Engineers. And with our little Engineers Castle on our hats, we are representing the Engineers who were recruited here in Cape Girardeau.
More stories coming up after the break.
Hi, I'm David Green. Chances are you might listen to me on your commute, and chances are your radio is your favorite part of your car these days. So when the time comes, donate your ride and turn it into the programs you love.
Donate your car at krcu.org and click on support.
Welcome back to KRCU's Going Public. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. The Cape Girardeau Conservation Nature Center hosted a kickoff event for the Great Missouri Birding Trail. Missouri is the 40th state to have a trail like this, which was created by Mike Doyen, president of the Missouri Bird Conservation Foundation. It's not a physical walking trail, but an online guide for the best places to go birding in the state. KRCU's Lindsay Grogene captured the sounds of the birding trail kickoff and tagged along for a short birding expedition for this audio postcard.
Okay. 10 years I've been walking around this state looking at the most unbelievably beautiful, unique habitats I think I'm ever going to see in my life. My name is Mike Doyen, and I am the director and the founder of the Great Missouri Birding Trail. We drove to Florida. We drove along the Gulf Coast, Texas, Louisiana. We went over to Nebraska. All these states have trails. So we started looking at their trails. And then we started doing a lot of internet research on what other states have these and how are they put together and what do they tell people. All it did was direct people to places that are public lands. We knew that we had to let people know what native Missouri looks like, because if the habitat's right, the birds are going to be there. We boiled the trail down to 225 locations. And these 225 locations have the best native habitat of anywhere in Missouri. Invasive plants are literally taking over our state. They don't produce invertebrates. Birds don't nest in them or stay in them. They have absolutely no value in our state. So when you put in all of these aggressive invasive species, native species can't grow. And if native species can't grow, you're not going to have deer, you're not going to have quail, you're not going to have turkey, you're not going to have ducks. And this is a huge hunting area down here. You know, you look at hunters, where they go. They go to places that MDC has built or that Ducks Unlimited have built. These places are full of native plants that birds and ducks have to have. So it's critical that you have native plants in your backyard and your backwoods.
We all have our own personal stories of how I think we were first became or fell in love with birds. And I have to make a confession. I'm an addicted turkey hunter. But I've been blessed to hunt often with a guy named Dave Murphy, who people at the department know is the chairman of our commission, but he taught ornithology at the university years ago. And so while we were awaiting the most mystical sound of all, which of course is the gobble of the wild turkey, he would introduce to me other songbirds. And I will treasure those early mornings so often. Being introduced to some of Missouri's favorite songbirds, and I know we each have our own story.
All right, so now for the guided birding walks. if you see them walking on the ground, they have an interesting behavior. They bob up and down.
Really?
Yep. They look like they're nervous about something.
You can't even see them.
I think he flew back. Yeah. They'll chip when they fly sometimes. Crested flycatcher. They're the only flycatcher we have around here. Tree cavities and holes in trees. Sometimes nest, if you have a big gourd with a hole bored in it, they'll nest in that.
Take a look at the Great Missouri Birding Trail, become a friend, get involved, enjoy Native Missouri.
To check out the Great Missouri Birding Trail, visit our website at krcu.org. Since we're at the peak of graduation season, we're taking a moment to acknowledge someone from Southeast. At this year's spring commencement ceremony, Douglas Green, an emeritus member of the Southeast Missouri State University Foundation Board of Directors, received an honorary doctoral degree. KRCU's General Manager Dan Woods spoke with Green about it.
Well, you're here on campus to receive an honorary doctor, so congratulations, first of all, for that.
Thank you.
Southeast has a special place in your heart, and why so? What's special about Southeast to you? And you've put a lot of time and energy and money into this institution. Why is that?
I think it was a willing audience. Frankly, when they bought into the whole concept of entrepreneurship back in 2005, I mean, from the president on down, Dr. Dobbins back then, Jerry McDougall, Jack Sterrett, all these people, they really were ready, and they were supportive. And people in the community were very supportive. Jay Knutson, for example, is a person I met very early on. Mm-hmm. He just thought it was great, the whole concept. And it continued. It just grew. Like we've got now four out of the five schools have either a major or a minor in entrepreneurship. There was none of that 12 years ago. And we've got the Catapult Center, which Charlie Stamp funded, which is wonderful, and we've got the Doug Green Center, which is it's been changed. Its functions have changed a little bit. We're doing a lot of more outreach to the communities around Cape Girardeau, and it was just the mindset here at this university. Southeast was very, very open, always has, and I know it will be under Dr. Vargas. He's talking to me about his drone program, and I'm talking about, I'd like to see, I think we're going to have a shortage of tradespeople in this country. And there's nothing demeaning about being a carpenter or a plumber or an electrician. And I know that's not the function of a four-year institution like this, and there's trade schools for things like this, but I'd love to see this university maybe take a position on that. Could be part of the curriculum somewhere along the line, that this could be the fallback. Maybe you're not going to go to work for an Apple or an Oracle or all these companies. The jobs aren't out there, maybe.
We're in commencement season. If you were to give some advice to graduating seniors, what would you tell them as they go out into the big wide world?
Well, I come back to my theme is, thinking outside the box. The greatest mistake a business executive can make is being afraid to make a mistake. And I think a lot of people are afraid to take that challenge, to challenge authority. And I'm not saying, let's not go out and riot or anything, but to ask the questions, why are we doing it this way? And first of all, you should also have maybe a better way to do it, but that helps. And part of my world was that, and it's a big joke in the family, but I ask for forgiveness rather than permission. I just go ahead and do things.
I've done that on occasion.
I'm sure you have.
I have.
I think just get out there and mix it up. Put that phone down. I really got a thing for the smartphone, that I think it's a huge distraction, and I worry about the social interplay today of students. Today they can sit in a restaurant and text across the table to each other. It makes no sense to me at all because they don't engage in conversation.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Douglas Green is the 10th person to receive an honorary degree from the university. He joins a list of previous recipients like singer Sheryl Crow. That's our show. You can find these stories on our website at krcu.org or find us on iTunes to hear this podcast. I'm Marissa Ann Lewis-Thompson. Join me Friday nights at 6 and Sundays at 3 for KRCU's Going Public.